This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's Paul Hamilton.
Oh, Cervantes and Hamilton are going to each other and the whiskey.
We have a fight.
With Mike Schopen, the Bulldog.
Knocheck was just totaled by an Iowa State player against the board.
I think it was by Hamilton.
Not WGR.
Really a pretty unnecessary hit by Hamilton. Hamilton is still awfully mad. He's being held back.
Number 17, Paul Hamilton. 2 minutes for charging, 5 minutes for fighting, and a misconduct.
Sports Radio 550.
To be fair, though, Joe, there have been more than a few potential last ever games at the Nassau Coliseum. Would you agree?
There have been dozens.
There were games that we thought were the last game at the Nassau Coliseum, and then somehow weren't. But yes, tonight could be the latest of those. Thanks for listening, everybody. The Sabre community mourning the death of Rene Robert. Paul Hamilton, who, of course, has been with us for many years and around the Sabres for more, joins us now on the West Her Hotline. Hi, Paul.
How you doing, Mike?
Okay, so when you think about Robert, as we're all doing today, what comes to mind first?
A guy, and I think everybody that talked about him today, and by the way, the Instigators did a great job in honoring Rene Robert with their guests, and it was very enjoyable to listen to, but just the guy who could score the big goal. I mean, Martin and Perreault had the talent, and Rene Robert had talent too. I don't mean to say that he didn't, but you know, they had the superstar talent, and Rene Robert would score the big goal. I mean, when you absolutely had to have a goal, Rene Robert was the one that scored it. And we talked about this yesterday, maybe the most iconic goal in Sabre history was in game three against the Philadelphia Flyers in the Stanley Cup Finals. He scores in the fog game. And even I remember him talking about it to one of those Sabre caravans when I was chatting with him, that, you know, he said, you know, he knew Bernie Perron couldn't see the puck. So all the Sabres were doing was trying to shoot on the ice and trying to, you know, get it through him, which is exactly what he did. And he felt that Perron never saw the puck, you know, coming at him. So, you know, that was, you know, something that really was fun to watch.
Like, Paul, I'm glad you mentioned so early in our conversation the Sabres caravans, because one of my first observations today was about how at whatever event that I was fortunate enough to be invited to take part in, or even station events, things where alumni were going to be there, I feel like Rene Robert was always at those events. And this is not to, like, criticize other guys who just maybe had other priorities or just weren't around as often, but I feel like Rene was always present at those things, and proudly so. And I think that really says a lot about what the organization really meant to him, even though, you know, I know he had his battles with the team after he stopped playing. But I think he was always very proud of his association with the Sabres, and it's become very obvious to me over the years that was the case.
He was proud of it, and he was very upset at the Sabres not having success the last X amount of years. It bothered him a lot. And those caravans on the road were very well attended by Sabre fans all over the country, Dallas, Los Angeles, Raleigh, you name it. We probably were in almost every city, and it was just packed with Sabre fans. And Rene Robert, Rob Ray, Danny Gare, they were always at those things. The Sabres would fly them in, and they'd be interacting with fans. And that was one of the fun things about listening to the stories today on the Instigators. I was honored to have the opportunity to hear from Rene personally and to hear a lot of those things. And when they would tease him, you know, about the, you know, he was always, and I think Gilbert told this story, he was always upset about boy, I could have made like $8 million a year if I played now, you know, and, right. and then they would tease him back. I think it was either Rob or somebody else or Danny would tease him back saying, well, the third guy in the line wouldn't make $8 million. And then he'd get, and that would get to Renee. Renee would get, he would start saying, well, wait a minute, blah, 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 and they just knew how to light his fire. And it was just hilarious to watch. And I probably saw that three or four times. And every time it was just so funny to watch because it would just get Renee going, and they loved getting him going.
In the cap era, you know, you wouldn't be able to keep all three guys, maybe. So we wouldn't have – I mean, there's so many reasons to think about how it's different than it used to be. One line, so iconic with the name to go with, such a great name, on one team for so many years, Paul. I mean, it's just so far away as a hockey thing.
Yeah, it is. The eras are just so different. I mean, we could sit here and talk for two straight days about how the different things in the two eras. And you're right, probably in the salary cap era, that Sabre team wouldn't have been able to stay together. That Flyer team probably would not have been able to stay together in a salary cap era. So, I mean, because, you know, you think of it. I mean, the Sabres had guys on their third line, and back then they did number lines, that were scoring 31 goals. And they'd be making money, too. You know, as you know, Rick Dudley was on that line and would score 31. Jim Lorenz would score over 30, you know, on that line. And you know, and you got Luce, Ramsey, and Gare all over 30 goals on your second line, and star penalty killers and winning NHL awards. So yeah, you're right. In the salary cap era, I would think it would almost been impossible to keep that team together.
Mike asked me earlier, because you know he was too young to really have seen Rene play, and I'm curious what sort of a job I did describing him, Paul, because I said I think he had maybe some of Rick and some of Gilbert. Like, he was a very good playmaker, but had a very good shot, a big shot, a slap shot from the point on the power play, setting guys up on the power play, and was a great skater.
Yeah, he was a good skater. Yeah, you described it perfectly. He could take the best talents of Martin and Perreault and combine them into, you know, being a very good hockey player. And the point on the power play, he explained that he's not trying to score when he's on the point in the power play. And he had a great shot. He explained how he would try to set people up in front, whether it's to get a tip or whether it's just to hit them with the puck, just to get rebounds, because he knew he had players that were going to be around that net and would be there for those rebounds. So he said his all he was trying to do is get a hard, low shot through that would get to the net, and if it was screened and went in, fine. But, you know, he was just trying to get it so he could get pucks around there, and then guys like Perreault, Martin, Jimmy Lorenz was on the power play, Danny Gare was sometimes on the power play. They could just clean up in front of the net there.
You know, not so much a question, I guess, but an observation. You made the point about how teams stayed together. We all know that about sports, even if we're younger than when that was the case. But it's interesting to me how certain of those franchises, including the Sabres, sort of developed a reputation for themselves by who was on those teams and how they played, like their style. I mean, that Sabre team of the 70s was one thing. The Flyers you mentioned, or Boston, another. And the Islanders were a certain way, and the Canadiens, and other teams perhaps too. And I think those reputations still linger, even though they are so long ago. Like Boston, you might not even notice if Boston isn't physical, right? Because it became their brand, and their uniforms are the same, and they're the Boston Bruins, so they're probably physical, and I'm just not sort of thinking about it right now when I watch them play. I mean, most teams now play pretty much the same, but on some level, I think they still have their reputations from a long time ago, or they can.
Well, they did, and in that Stanley Cup Finals, you had the Broad Street Bullies. Yeah, they could score. They had some guys that could score, but they're going to beat you in the alley. They want you to be deathly afraid of them, and they felt if you were afraid of them, then their skill could kick in and they could win, where the Sabres were the high-flying Frenchmen, the French Connection. They want to run and gun. They want to skate. Their goaltending isn't as good. And the reason the Flyers won that series was, one, Roger Crozier couldn't play that much. He played a little bit. He played in that game 6 that they lost 2-0. and he only let in a goal to Bob Kelly. And so they were getting beat in goal. And when they were in the auditorium, they were fine. The Sabres were able to wheel. It's when they got to Philadelphia. That's when you didn't see Gilles Perreault. Gilles Perreault, he put up all his numbers in that series at home in Buffalo. He was almost invisible in Philadelphia. They used to call it the Philly flu because those fans would get their Flyers all revved up and teams just wouldn't play their game in Philadelphia. And that was the difference in the series. It wasn't that Perreault had a totally bad series. He just wasn't good in the Philadelphia games, but the Buffalo games, he was Gilbert Perreault again, and he was able to wheel and do his thing.
With Paul Hamilton here on the Wester Hotline, Rene Robert died yesterday at the age of 72. You know, I like Bulldog's point a lot about how Robert was omnipresent at these events. You know, that does say something about a guy. And you were also saying, I don't want to be critical of other guys who weren't that way, but it really does, if I'm not going too far, it really does speak to somebody's sort of love for the franchise and love for those guys and the memories and just trying to keep that, pardon the pun, but keep that connection going later in life. And it sounds like Robert was someone who that meant a lot to.
It did. It really, these last 10 years have really made him angry. How poorly the Sabres were doing. He was embarrassed by it, being part of the Sabres organization for so many years. And it really upset him. He wanted to see the Sabres win the Stanley Cup. He wanted to see them do well. It was his team. Now, of course, it wasn't the only team he played on, but he played most of his years in Buffalo. And this was his team. And he took a lot of pride in this city. He took a lot of pride in this team. And he took a lot of pride in his teammates. And Rob Ray pointed out, too, is he's never let the past, meaning the past players, be forgotten. You know, he was the guy that would always make sure everybody in the alumni was included. You know, or if somebody in the alumni was having a tough time, Rene Robert made sure they were taken care of, you know, and no matter what a tough time meant, whether it's money problems, whether it's whatever problems, mental illness or anything that they needed, he was the guy that made sure that it was taken care of. And I think that does speak a lot towards him.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned sort of how the guys would razz him, how Rene would say, if I played now, I'd make $8 million. And I had my share of conversations with him. They were usually brief, but, like, that sort of vibe came across. And I guess over the course of, you know, not just since he had the heart attack a few days ago and now ultimately has passed away, I would say before that, maybe a few years ago, I sort of figured out that, like, whatever jealousy there may have been there about the money that's available now, I think the point you're making here, Paul, about his wanting to make sure guys were taken care of, like, that's where that sprang from. Like, there's obviously resources here. These teams, the whole league has money, and guys who are struggling and in part struggling with health problems that may have been caused by playing this game and going through what they've gone through, you know, they need some help, and they should get it from the league. There should be more available to them. And I think rather than just thinking of him as someone who thought, man, I played in the wrong era because I could have been a multimillionaire, I think it feels more to me as the years have gone by and I reflect on my interactions with him that it was more like you should just recognize that there are guys out here, sort of like how Joe DeLaMalier has been about the former players in the NFL. Like, don't turn a blind eye to these guys. They spilled it for this sport and for these teams, and, you know, some of them are in tough shape.
That's why he was so active both in the National Hockey League Alumni Association and the Buffalo Sabres Alumni Association. I didn't realize he ran the Sabres alumni for a long time. Rob was talking about that. I know Rob has run it for a long time too, but before Rob, Rene did. And Rob talked to Rene a lot, would use him as counsel to, say, all right, we've got this going on, we got that going, what do you think? And he said Rene would always be very honest with him, and that's what he respected the most about him, that he's not going to sugarcoat it. He's going to tell you exactly what he thinks. But he thought, he said it was a huge help to him as he's been trying to maneuver through running the alumni now.
All right, with Paul Hamilton. We talked to Paul yesterday, catching up on some big Sabre topics. I don't know that there are any currently any developments in this area. We do have the playoffs continuing here. Montreal is one game from the finals. We have this streak, I'm sure you guys are aware of, how a Canadian team has not won the Stanley Cup since 1993, when it was the Canadiens over the Kings. They're one game away from beating, I think, a much superior Vegas team and being in the Stanley Cup Finals, where they would not be the underdog they were in this round.
Yeah, we'll never know, but Vegas kind of acts to me like they just thought, well, all right, we beat Colorado, we're in, type of thing. And I think they totally overlooked Montreal. I don't think they took Montreal seriously. I didn't, but I'm not a player. But I didn't take Montreal seriously.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I thought an easy sweep and on we go. And just watching them, and there's no jump to their game. I don't know if the Colorado series took it out of them, but there's no jump to their game. They don't seem to be on top of things. They seem to be a step behind. They don't seem to have any spirit. They just seem blah. Now, a lot of that, I'm sure, is, first of all, Carey Price in goal. Second of all, the way the Canadians are playing. The Canadians are running them down. You know, they're giving them very little space, and if Vegas wants to score goals and wants space, they're going to have to go out, and they're going to have to play hard, and they're going to have to earn it. And they don't seem to be playing hard as they were against Colorado. And I don't know if it's fatigue. I don't know if it's overconfidence, but they just don't at all look like the same team. And, yes, Montreal does have something to do with that, but, you know, I just wonder if they just didn't take them seriously.
They've not given up a power play goal, guys, since in 12 games. The Canadians. It's the longest streak since 1934.
Absolutely. And they always say, you've always heard coaches say, your best penalty killer is your goaltender. It starts there, but it's not only there. I mean, it's the penalty killers themselves. And quite honestly, I think Montreal has better chances shorthanded than Vegas has had with the power play. I mean, Montreal, they jump. They get it. They have a play, and they'll get a turnover, and off they go. They're looking to score shorthanded.
Yeah, Montreal has been a fast, good skating team for a couple of years now. You know, they did not have a very good regular season. They would not have made the playoffs in any other division. So, you know, there's my backhanded apology for overlooking them. I mean, I didn't think that this was going to work for them. But I think you're right, Paul. I don't know what is happening with Vegas. And you know, one play does not, like, warrant making an overall point about them not being dialed in or lack of effort. But the Mark Stone, I mean, he's their captain. He's Mr. Selke, all-around great player. The lack of effort on, I think it's the Caulfield goal last night, that I mean, the Vegas is shorthanded to begin with. He gives the puck away on a rush at the Montreal blue line. And, I mean, he is just floating behind Caulfield, who gets an easy pass for a wide-open net. And if he is skating at all, he is there to break that play up. But he's just floating behind it with his stick at his waist. I mean, I couldn't believe it.
I noticed that, too. And that's when I talk about desire and just giving up on plays.
Yeah.
I mean, Montreal doesn't give up on plays. I mean, they you know, there's no question Vegas is the more talented team. No question. But Montreal just doesn't give up on plays. They're tenacious, you know, and they have now have gotten confidence, and they're not worried about Vegas's power play because they think their penalty kill is better, and I think they're right. And, you know, each and every and think of the series anyway, Vegas just barely got past to get their second win. This series almost was over. Vegas just barely got win number two. You know, and but then you could say too that Fleury gave away a game. Also, there was only about a minute 50 left. And
right,
Vegas is on top, and Fleury makes
it's
that
hockey.
Play. If Fleury makes that play, Vegas probably wins that game.
That is right.
Right.
I mean, thank you for pointing that out. That's maybe from 3-1, although the other game could have gone differently. But that's the benefit of being a superior team. They're just down here. You know, maybe that was a lazy play. Did you see though the one play with the Diamondbacks where the guy from Milwaukee was coming around third, Vogelbach, and he pulled up lame like he was injured running home, but they didn't throw it? That was worse.
I missed that.
Yeah.
You see that one, Paul?
I watched my Yankees last night, too, just do a bonehead play. You got a guy at first. You're down by a run. I believe it was the eighth or ninth inning. And there's a play where Torres is up, check swing, the ball gets by the catcher. The ball's in the dirt, gets by the catcher. Of course, the guy at first goes to second, and Torres is standing there arguing or standing there thinking, well, all right, whatever. Run to first base. All you had to do is run to first base, and you're safe. Because they said, yeah, you swung. So you've now struck out, but the ball's back next to the backstop up the third baseline, and you're still standing at home plate when the catcher grabs the ball. Then you decide to run. And that stuff drives me out of my mind. I cannot stand players that don't hustle. It just drives me crazy to watch that stuff. And I watch it way too much in baseball. And, yeah, it's a similar type of thing. I mean, you're just not thinking. You're paid enough money, you should be able to hustle from home plate to first base.
You guys will like the highlight of the Diamondbacks catcher jumping up and down, stomping on home plate to get the guys to throw him the ball as the runner can barely walk. You'll like that one.
Must not have been a good night. It was not a good night for, I guess, the fundamentals in baseball. There's a play in the Tampa Red Sox game I saw a highlight of. Men on first and second, one out. Ball, hard hit ball to third base, and Devers has a hard time handling it. The runner from second started to go to third, which, of course, he has to do. It's a ground ball. And he stopped. He sees Devers get in front of the ball. He stops and goes back to second, where, of course, he meets the runner coming from first. I'm like, what are you doing, dude? Like, you cannot stay put. You have to go to third. Those are the rules.
This stuff doesn't matter anymore. It's just home runs or why bother?
Right. Right.
I don't think they do fundamentals all that much in spring training anymore, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, no. Maybe not. All right, Paul. Well, sorry for the occasion here, but I appreciate you coming on as always.
No, I hate the occasion, but I do enjoy talking about Renee because he was a great person.
That's a good way to wrap it up. Thanks again, Paul.
Yep.
Well done, Paul. Paul Hamilton on our West Hur Hotline, and his appearances are brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Planning for your future is about more than just money. Let Equitable be your guide. And by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.